You are. It's Ken Connors, and good morning to Walter Rossi from Renovco, who's back in studio. How are you, Walter?
I am doing great. How are you?
On a scale of 1 to 10, how nice is it outside this morning? It's very comfortable, no?
It's comfortable. I actually enjoy the weather change for, you know, it gives us a bit of a break, especially if we're working outside. It's beautiful for that weather.
Yeah, you don't get overheated. And, yeah, it's great weather to work around the yard, which reminds me I've got some cleaning up to do in the yard. We trimmed a couple of the trees in the backyard.
So I thought the storm already took care of that. Yeah, trimmed a lot of people's trees.
No kidding. Yeah, no kidding. Anyhow, it's good to have you back. Can we get right to the lines here?
Of course.
514-790-0800. If you have something going on at home, an issue, a job, a repair, renovation, you need a little help from or guidance from an expert, we've got the guy here, Walter Rossi from Renovco. We're going to start with Gary in Pointe Claire. Gary, hi, how are you? Gary, you there? Oh, you know what? Jimmy just left the studio. Gary, if you can hear me, hang on. Jimmy left the studio, and he might have forgotten to put the channel up in the control room.
Yes.
So, Walter, can I ask you to run around and just push every one of them up?
I'm not sure I'm going to be pushing the right button, but we can try.
The old days, we used to push everyone up if you weren't sure. Gary, hang on and be patient.
It's usually Jimmy that is looking for me, but right before the show, and now we're looking for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yard work is important to do. Last week we talked a bit, we had one of the callers, and Jan was always a big proponent of preaching this, that when it comes to water damage around the foundation of the house and getting into the basement, it was always important to look at your landscaping and make sure that the land slopes down away from the house as opposed to towards the house, right?
That's correct. Some studies even suggest that 90%, up to 90% of the water if you slope your house correctly, you could eliminate up to 90% of the water that goes to your French drain. That's a big amount of water. I see Jimmy just moved back in, so that's actually a good sign.
Yeah. We're going to go to the phone now. Jimmy, just make sure our phone channel is up here. The number to call if you want to talk to Walter, you have a question for him, it's 514-790-0800, 514-790-0800. Walter's here for the entire hour. Let's go to the phone and see if we can bring Gary up now. Gary, are you there? Gary? Jimmy, you got to put
Gary. I'm sorry? Do not adjust your set.
Gary, you're on Pointe Claire. You want to talk to Walter about a dryer vent issue, right?
Yeah. Good morning, Walter. I was helping out a friend of mine, and he put his washer and dryer on the second floor.
Okay.
And above him is the attic space, and the only place to vent it, I could not vent out through an adjacent wall. I had to go vertical up into the attic space, and the original was I was using rigid and then semi-rigid, you know, the corrugated stuff, and then the insulated blanket stuff that uses the spring steel inside for about 4 or 5 feet, and then vertical up into through the roof. And with what was going on was it wasn't venting very well because there was an accumulation of lint, it seems, right at the exit. We took the screen off, the little tiny mesh screen that was there. We took that off. That seemed to help a little bit, but it still wasn't running that well. And then finally, we changed the whole thing to rigid insulation, 25 gauge, rigid pipe.
Yeah.
25 gauge, 4-inch pipe, and went vertically up and then diagonally towards the vent and then out the vent. And what's happening now, even though we insulated that whole thing with the blanket and tucked it all around, we're getting water coming down, obviously condensation coming down the pipe. So do I have to, like, in order to keep this correct, I have two questions. One, is that the best way to go, or do I have to switch it to a high temperature PVC that's waterproof? And two, will the dryer take the water that possibly could come back into it?
It is a problem. It's more common to have this problem when you go through the roof of the dryer vent, unfortunately. And it might require you to clean that vent up to twice a year. So that's a common problem that we see. Because you're going vertically through the roof, and it's a longer trajectory, so you might have some issues. Now, what kind of dryer vent did you use? Like, what kind of device did you use on the roof itself?
It It's actually, I think it's made by Maxim, and it's a 45 CT4. It has a damper on it.
Okay.
And it also had that mesh screen, but we took that mesh screen off because that seemed to be accumulating lint. So now there's no mesh screen on it, but the damper still closes when there's no air pressure.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, do we need to take that damper off so that it evaporates?
Well, I wouldn't do that, no. But there is one device that I like. It's called Dryer Jack. I don't know if you've looked into that. It have good reviews, and it works. It works well when it comes to roof vents. Okay,
okay.
Because that, you know, you will run into issues. Depend on how long the span is that you're also running.
It's only about 5 feet in the attic space, and it runs diagonal.
It runs diagonal, so. Technically speaking, you shouldn't be running into that much of problems, but you will run into problems regardless. Mm-hmm. You would have to keep it clean. Maybe the termination vent is not the adequate one. I Maximum usually does good quality stuff, mm-hmm. but I've never used it personally for dryer vents. Okay. So that might, you know, look into Dryer Jack. That might be something that that will work out. But always factor in that you would have to clean it twice a year.
Yeah, even though I've got, like, the inside of the pipe was quite smooth. But now I'm getting, my big worry is not so much the lint anymore, because we've got a smooth run. Mm-hmm. The big worry now is the water that's condensing and coming back into the dryer.
Yeah, so that means maybe the damper is not working adequately, like you said, and that's why you need a good termination for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, look into, read up on Dryer Jack. Okay.
Yep.
There's a couple of models that you could use depending on how high up you are on the slope.
Okay.
One is higher than the other one. So read up on it, and that might be a good solution for you, Gary.
Super. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul. Bud.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks,
Gary. Bye now.
All right.
It's 9:15. Nancy, hang on. And by the way, a couple of lines are free right now. If you want to talk to Walter, you have a question, go right ahead and give us a call at 514-790-0800. Right back to the phone. By the way, the number is 514-790-0800. Nancy is out in beautiful Magog. How are you, Nancy?
I'm great. It's a beautiful morning out here. The leaves are beginning to change colors. It's awesome.
Oh, gorgeous. I love it. Do you want to talk about a double sink?
Yeah, I have like a stainless steel double sink in the kitchen, and I'm just curious, like when I do my dishes and then I pull the plug to let all the sudsy soap go down, it always seems to come back up the other side of the stainless steel sink, like the bubbles come up. Why is that? And I have to use my swivel faucet just to clean out the suds on both sides.
You might be having a tiny blockage. Have you tried to fish it through? Just to
meet. No, I haven't. No, I just have put up with just, you know, running some cold water and getting the suds out from both sides. But I was just curious, like, why it does that?
Yeah, it's, sometimes you have a small blockage and it just backs up because it can't take the full volume of the water rushing through, so
rushing,
it backs
okay.
up through the other end.
So just use one of those little small fishy things and just see if it unclogs.
That's correct. Maybe it's a bit of a block in the drain itself. It's a partial block, small block, so it's not. It shouldn't be, because if it would have been a bigger block, then you would have had.
Yeah, it's
water
nothing
stain.
Major, but I was just
yeah.
curious.
No, it does happen sometimes. It does happen. It also boils down to the installation sometimes. If it's not adequately installed, the other connection from the other sink to this sink. Plumbing-wise,
oh,
as a drain, it could also back up like that. But try unblocking it first, and I think that should correct
the problem.
That's
okay.
correct.
Mm-hmm. How's that?
Thanks so much. Have a good weekend, guys.
Thank you, Nancy. Appreciate the call. Off to DDO for Leslie. Hi, Leslie.
Good morning. How are you, gentlemen?
We're in great shape. The weather looks great. You want to talk about this 1960s home and some wiring issues or questions, right?
Well, the thing is, we have we are putting in recessed lighting, and the insulation that we have, the vapor barrier, is made out of kraft paper, and we're trying to figure out a way to fish the wiring between the forenses, the furrings, my bad, and the paper without ripping it, because it is so delicate at this point. We're just stumped at this point. We need to know how we can figure out a way to actually put these pot lights in without ruining that vapor barrier and the wiring in that too.
What actually stumps me is that you do have fairing strips in a 1960s construction. So are you sure you have fairing strips? That's my first question.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. We have part of the ceiling open.
Okay, that's impressive. That's impressive.
Well, it could have been renovated prior. We don't know with a new ceiling. But all that to say, the craft paper vapor barrier is still there.
Yeah, I mean, usually when you want to fish wires, you could fish it through the actual fairing strips. So you don't need to touch the whole idea behind the fairing strips. A good portion of the reasoning behind it is to be able to fish wires. So I don't see why you would even be touching that craft paper.
Well, it's because the way that the weight of the insulation is pushing down on the craft paper, it overlaps onto the gyprock, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah. It does. I mean, the good thing with insulation, you can always push it back, but...
it's so delicate. As soon as you touch it, it breaks. And if we don't have that insulation anymore, then the air is going to be coming through. So.
Yeah, I mean, the whole concept of the paper, the craft paper, vapor barrier, to be honest with you, is not a great... it was not a great invention for the time, because paper with condensation gets moldy. So
okay.
It's not really the best. That's why a 6 mil vapor barrier is used now, is because it's way more sturdy and it does not mold when it's in touch with condensation and so on.
Yeah.
Like, which is very highly likely.
We're very lucky right now that we do not have any of that situation.
Yeah. One way that you could do it is your attic accessible?
It is, but it's very difficult to get to.
Okay.
Because we have two pitches on the roof.
Yeah.
We have to climb over one pitch to get into the other.
So one way is to fish it through the attic, and that's very common for electricians to do.
But you still have to break the vapor barrier at one point.
Well, then you tape it, right? When you have access where you're breaking it, then you can tape it. So that if you're doing it from above, it's doable that way because you have access. From below, you're not going to have that access. You're going to have the drywall to deal with. So from the attic is one way. The other thing that you could do from the attic is potentially, if you don't want to work in there for a long time, is take out that insulation in that area in order to release that pressure on the ballooning of the insulation, so you can fish your wires from the bottom without having that issue.
Okay. I'm just wondering, I think the insulation, if I'm not incorrect, is stapled. Not the insulation, but the vapor barrier is stapled to the trusses on top, the joists.
Usually if you have the fairing strips, that's fine.
Mm.
Again, it's the reason it's ballooning is because of the weight of the insulation.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you want to have that space, the way you could do it is by fishing the wire, by removing the insulation on top, and that way you're going to release the pressure, and then you could do it from the bottom. If not, fish it from the top. And then tape it wherever you are protruding through.
I'm just curious, are there any tools out there that make this job a little easier, that's soft?
Fishing wires, there is, of course. Yeah, there's electricians use that all the time. Lumen should have some if you ever want to look for them. But yeah, there's definitely are you doing the job yourself?
We're going to fish the wires just because we're concerned about the paper barrier, but we are going to actually hire an electrician to do all the connecting.
Okay. When you're doing the pot lights, very important thing that is a common mistake is to buy the dimmer that is compatible with your pot lights. If not, you're going to have flickering.
That humming.
And the humming, which is very, very irritating.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for all the information.
Thanks, Leslie.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Good luck with that. 514-790-0800. You know what? We're going to take a call, and we'll just set up the call, and then we'll go to news because we have about a minute and a half. How does that sound?
You're so good with customer service. You have all these lines blinking in front of you, and you need to take that call.
Well, I'm only one man. I do what I can. Tula, good morning.
Yes, hi. Hi, good morning.
You're out in Laval, right?
Yes, I am.
All right.
I have a multiplex, six units, and I want to change the doors to each unit, the main door, then when they come in. Is there anything I should, like, consider? And also, why is it so hard to find a company to do that?
Very good. Atula, so I don't know if you heard my preamble, but we're going right up against the news. So Walter has heard your question, and we're going to put you on hold and come right back to you as soon as the newscast is over, all right?
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Just one other note here I wanted to mention. CJAD 800 is offering up a great gift. Time. Listen to Andrew Carter again all this week to win yourself $300 to spend at Bon Si Bon. You win $300 worth of quality prepared meals that are freshly made and delivered right to your door. They had a great week of these giveaways this past week here on the Andrew Carter Morning Show, and they're coming back for more. So you don't need to prep, clean up, stress about planning or cooking. All you have to do is listen to Andrew and the gang on the Morning Show to win from Bon Si Bon right here on CJAD 800.
Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
514-790-0800 is the number to call to talk to Walter Assey from Renovco in the chair, answering your questions and offering the guidance. Samira in Brossard, Elaine in Saint Laurent, we're going to get to you. We haven't forgotten about you, and we haven't forgotten about Tula as well. Tula, so we're changing the doors in that multiplex, right?
Correct.
Okay. You need some advice from Walter.
Correct.
So in a case where you're changing doors in a commercial building, what you want to look at is the fire rated door. Mm-hmm. The minimum is 45 minutes. Plus, you need a self-closing device, meaning when the tenants leave the apartment, the door shuts down automatically.
Yes.
These are the prerequisites.
Mm-hmm.
They're very important prerequisites, because if you don't do that, you're going to be wasting money. Number one, the insurance company is not going to pass inspection. Number two, the fire department is not going to pass inspection.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. The only thing is, I can't find any companies that want to install these doors.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
Mm-hmm.
The more important than the fire rating is for the door to be homologué. So you will have a sticker on the door to prove that this door is fire rated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It comes in letters. So it's A, B, C, A, B, and C. And each letter is indicative of the level of fire retardant you have on the door. More importantly, and that's very, very, very common, is when you install these doors and they're homologued and you're all happy with them, you should not paint that sticker. Because most of the time you buy them, they're rough. You want to stain them or paint them. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, you come in and then the inspector can't find the sticker, so he doesn't pass you because the painter have painted it. So it's very important.
Right.
I'm just giving you like a heads up because we see that all the time.
Okay.
And the self-closing device is as important. Now, it shouldn't be a problem for you to find those doors. I don't know why you're not finding companies that
do
that.
I'm calling different companies that do installation of doors, for example, like outside doors and everything.
Yeah, you're calling
them. And they all tell me we do not do the inside part.
Because you're calling...
I had my main door changed, but the main door changed, but the company that did it does not do indoors.
Okay.
So that's the issue. Is I'm just having very hard time finding a company that will change all these, like, six doors.
Yeah. So you're calling the wrong companies. Windows and doors companies do not do interior doors, and they are right. what you need is carpenters.
That's
correct. Company that specialize in carpentry and door installation, indoor door installations. The problem with these doors, more often than not, is you have to custom order them. It takes a while to get them.
No, it's going
to
be a custom order for sure.
That's right. And they have to be custom measured, because more often than not, the older duplexes or multiplexes do not have standard door measurements, unfortunately. So that might be an issue. These types of jobs, you're right, contractors want to stay away from, because there's a lot of details and so on and so forth. But it's a common thing that you could have, you know, carpenters do that for you. Just ensure, please, that you have an homologue door. Do not just buy a solid door, because that doesn't mean anything. If it's not homologued, it does not, you're wasting your money.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
All right, Tula, good luck with that.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now. That opens up a line at 514-790-0800. Off to Brossard. Samira, are you still there?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
We're good. Good to have you on the show. You want to talk about your floor, slanting floor?
Yes.
Okay.
It's on the second floor, and there's a heavy dressing table on it, but the wall adjacent to the slanting floor, in between the wall, like on the both sides of the wall, there's two doors, so they're having problems shutting. There's a diagonal crack on one side of the door, and on the other side there's a vertical crack going up on the other door. And the space above the doors is the attic space. And underneath, below the slanting floor, there's like a supporting beam, but it's not very wide, and it's also showing the cracks. Like a vertical diagonal crack. So initially I thought that, okay, maybe there was water running down from the bathroom adjacent to the bedroom, but there's no water drips or anything. So I also checked in the basement, and I don't see any cracks in the basement yet.
Okay.
So I don't know what's the, at least to have an idea.
Well, I can tell you that you can eliminate the water infiltration idea behind it because you have a slanted floor.
Okay.
Okay. Now, water does not really slant your floors. Okay. Unless it's curling, that's another story. That's water. But if you just have slanting, that's more indicative of structural movement.
Okay.
Okay. Having said that, typically, you want to look at the history of the house, meaning from the time you bought it, did you do any modifications in the walls below, like in the basement or in the first floor?
No.
Okay. The previous owners, have they done any renovations that you know about that, you know, they made the wall with a bigger opening or they removed the wall or anything like that?
They were the builders, but I don't have that information.
Okay. Because more often than not what happens is people, they have a supporting wall, they have a small opening in it, they decide to make a bigger opening or completely remove that wall.
Right.
And they don't know what they're doing, or they hire someone that is not very strong in structure, and they forget to look at a few things, and they don't put a header that is wide enough and big enough to carry the load.
Yeah.
And more often than not, they do, and then sometimes they don't. They forget about the point load after they remove the wall, right?
Okay.
So they forget to support the wall below it in order to take that point load weight.
Okay.
So that could be the case.
Yeah.
The point load is something that is very often forgotten. I don't know why, although it's a very important part of the puzzle. So when you are demolishing a wall, that's great that you're going to put the header and you're going to spread the weight, and then you're going to go on either side vertically down.
Yeah.
But that means that weight now is concentrated into these two points.
Okay.
So if you go below it and you have not really reinforced or beefed up that area,
yeah,
then you're going to run into trouble because the wall is going to sink, right?
Okay.
So you're going to have structural movement, and then you're going to have these types of slanted floors and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So look into the structure, look at what happened, start from the bottom floor and then look at the floor below that. And then, you know, that might start giving you some telltale sign of what's going on, okay? And in other times, we've been actually to the attic, because you mentioned the attic at one point.
Yes.
And yes, we've seen a cracked truss, you know? So there's many, many different hypotheses. It's very difficult to say over the phone.
Yes.
But it is a structural issue that you want to look into.
So should I hire an engineer?
You could. You know, just for a consultation, not necessarily for the plans at this point. They might not be able to give you a full, complete diagnostic right off the bat. They will ask for some openings in a lot of the cases.
Yeah.
But sometimes they can just, you know, something jumps in their face and you know, they see that, you know, an opening was done, the header was not adequately done, or so on and so forth. And if you're lucky, it will just stop there. You can then hire them to give you a plan on how the corrective measures should be.
So I do think maybe it's the opening, because underneath there is a family room.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got like a big open open space, you know, so that you can walk through. So right above is that supports, and it doesn't look like it's wide enough. It's maybe 10 inches or so.
I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised. It's very hard, again, to say it from the studio what's really going on.
Yeah.
And that's why I said in certain cases we need to open just to see, because, you know, sometimes, yes, you see that there's a space, but there has been no headers installed, believe it or not. So,
okay.
Again, we would need to see what's going on, and you could start with a structural engineer, or simply call a good general contractor and let them give you their, you know,
opinion.
What at least what they think initially and on their inspection.
How's that, Samira? Some help, hopefully.
Thank you so much. Right. It's been great, and
good luck with it.
Yeah, and it's great also to hear women calling. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the call. 9:45. A lot of women call into this show.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Right back to the phone here. We kept her waiting, and she's been very patient. Elaine, is that you out in Ville Saint-Laurent?
Yes, it is.
All right. You want to talk about an elevator in a condominium?
Yes. I live in a condo building that has 48 condos. The two garage floors are connected, and the first and the second floor are all connected to both buildings. By the third floor, you have two separations, and each one has an elevator. The buildings are 27 years old, and we're told now we need to change the elevators. They're going to keep the box, but they have to change all the mechanical stuff. And we were told it's going to take 7 weeks for each elevator, which absolutely makes no sense to me. So I want to ask Walter what he would know, or who we should call to get another quote on what this is all about.
I don't know if this is necessarily in your area of expertise, but take a best shot.
Well, I mean, I do know a little bit about elevators for sure, but 27 years old is not necessarily a very long time for an elevator. I've been involved in jobs where the elevator was 30 and 40 years old. Having said that, you do have a maintenance contract with a maintenance log from the companies that service the elevator, okay? And every few years, it's like a car, so you have, you know, tune up A, B, and C, and whatever. So it would require services, and some services are a bit more elaborate than others.
Yes, and that's been done. I'm here 9 years, and that's been done. The issue seems to be that every so often somebody's getting stuck in the elevator, and then we were told there's a new company working on them now, that some of the parts or whatever that were used because they're old were hard to get and maybe not correct. So now they're, as I said, they're talking about totally changing everything.
Yeah, I would be careful with that. Now
that's why I'm calling you, because it makes no sense to me.
Yeah. What brand elevator is it?
I don't know.
Okay. So here's the trick. When it comes to maintaining the elevators, it's a little bit like heat pumps and ventilation systems. You have certain companies that maintain Otis, and others maintain other types of elevators, right?
Right.
If you're getting the wrong company, meaning they don't necessarily deal with these particular parts, then you're going to run into problems, because, yes.
That's what I think happened in the past. So that's why I think it's Verditech or something like that that they're now with, who we've been very happy with that service, but they're still talking about changing both of them, and that's the part.
No. 27 years old, again, and this is my personal opinion. I don't know the status. I don't know the history and what have you. It's not very long for an elevator, and I don't think I think it's a bit drastic to replacing the whole elevator. You might have to replace major components on it, but not the whole elevator. That is something that I've not unheard of, okay?
Right.
Now, having said that, what I would do is I would look at the brand of the elevator and I would call that company that installs them. Like, so they have distributors, like like Otis, for example. They have three companies that represent them. And I would call these particular companies and I would use their inspectors, at least for diagnostic and at least for, you know, giving you a few advices on what are the options. You know, there's always a second option. There's always a second option. So I would not go that drastic. I would be very careful because, again, don't forget, when someone goes into a major rehaul, it's human error could occur. Okay, absolutely. We see it in cars all the time. You come in and they tell you, oh, this is a problem, and then you pay a whole bunch of money for something that is not really was not really necessary. When you take another opinion, they tell you another thing. So I would go to the company that is a distributor or installer, official installer of that particular brand, and these are the these are the technicians you want to talk to.
Okay, so then my question would be, if there are certain parts, obviously, that have been changed in the past and need to be changed, we're still not looking at anything like 7 weeks in elevator.
And that's where that's really the big issue. You might you might end up with a price sticker shock that's still up there. Sure thing is going to be cheaper than a major, like the replacing the whole elevator, but you're going to drastically cut that service time. So instead of being 7 weeks, it might take 5 days.
Right. This is the important thing for a lot of residents who are older in the building, who rely on an elevator, and, you know, they're not going to be able to do the stairs, so they're thinking, getting very nervous about 7 weeks. So that's why none of it made sense. And on one other note, as I said, the two towers are split. We have, I guess it's a vent on the roof, and now it seems that it's absolutely freezing in the halls. Is there, I'm assuming there's somewhere that you could sort of close it a little bit so that we don't have such cold air. I know there's fresh air that has to come through, but it shouldn't be freezing, and it shouldn't make it that we'd have to put on the heat so early.
That I'm going to have a visual inspection, see how they did it. And maybe if you have access to the plans of the condo tower, we could look at it and see what have been done. But it is not normal that it is freezing for sure. You do need the fresh air intake. But again, you know, there is guidelines for that. So
okay. Thank you very much.
Good luck, Elaine.
My pleasure, dear.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. What do you say, Jimmy? Do I just sneak in that call? It's got to be a mini, though. Marvin, our apologies. We're out of time, but you had a question about your concrete basement floor, right?
Yes, I did.
We got about a minute and a half, I think. Go ahead.
I'll be as quick as I can. Yeah.
Go.
Okay. Hi, Walter. I have a finished basement with a subfloor, except for my furnace room area. In my furnace room area, the concrete slab is starting to become very powdery. And every time I clean it up, the powder, the top layer of the slab becomes powdery again. I've had two foundation experts come in, and I get two different opinions from everybody. I've had my main drain checked by a company with a camera, and they found no blockage or anything. And the prominent area of the crumbling of the slab is all around the furnace. Okay. And my furnace is 4 years old. And I have a dehumidifier going in the furnace room, which I'm emptying twice a day.
Okay. Time is up, so
I'll give you 60 seconds. Go.
Okay.
Now, the drain, have you checked the drain in the furnace room?
Yeah, there's no backup. I had a company come in with a camera. They checked
so there's no water in that area. There's no foundation crack.
No, there's no dollar, there's no in for pyrite, and there's no cracking in the floor, no nothing.
Now, that powdery thing, water, is it white? Is it like, is it a white residue?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so that's efflorescence, meaning you have it. You have the salt from the cement is pushing through due to saturation, high saturation of water in the slab itself, okay? Now, that could be due to many things. It could be due to surface water that's coming from the top, which is not your case because you don't see it. So let's say if the drain of the heat pump of your furnace, it's not draining properly or you have issues, that would have been it. So it's not the case. It might be a higher water table from the bottom, and that's a bit more complicated to solve. And it might be they did not pour enough thickness of cement on the slab in that particular area.
Right.
We would have to come and inspect it and see, but I don't see any other reason behind it.
Marvin, we got to run.
Okay. Do you do this work, Walker? I could call you and set up an appointment.
You could always call me, Marvin. If I don't, I'll send you in the right direction.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Marvin.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, bud.
Walter, thanks for a great hour. It went by like this.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Fast. Walter Assey from Inovco. Don't go anywhere. Lisa's going to take over the chair. Answer all your car questions next on The Car Show on CJAD 800.